Members of the public, I'm Dave Kenton, the chairman of the Sussex County Personnel Board Advisory Committee. I'd like to call the public hearing to order. First item of business is to introduce the members of the committee. On my right is Mr. Mike Owens from Lewis. On my left is Mr. Clay Yoakum from
Greenwood.
I'd like to have a motion from the floor to approve the agenda, which I hope you all have a copy of. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
You don't have a copy.
Nobody has a copy.
Okay, stand by.
The total agenda is call to order, approval of agenda, and then the hearing on the following: review of termination of Sheriff Deputy Torres.
Motion to approve the agenda as presented.
Is there any discussion on this motion?
Second.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion has been approved. I'd like to turn the public hearing over to the county attorney, Mr. Everett Moore, for rules and guidelines.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is time and place for the appeal hearing before the Personnel Board regarding the dismissal of Sussex County employee Sheriff Deputy Ismael Torres, Jr. This shall be an informal hearing pursuant to Sussex County Code 29-15E. In order to proceed in an orderly fashion and ensure full participation by those present with an interest, the hearing will be conducted subject to the certain rules. 1. All persons present shall conduct themselves in an orderly fashion and take directions from the chair. Unruly or disorderly conduct, including applause or other disruptive behavior, will not be tolerated and may result in expulsion from the room. No public comments will be allowed. 2. For the courtesy of those here today, if you have a cell phone, pager, or other electronic device, please turn it off or set it to silent for the duration of the hearing. 3. Each witness will be asked to come forward and be sworn in. Each witness will then state his or her name and home address for the record. 4. The attorneys will be permitted to make an opening statement. 5. The county will then present its case for the employee's dismissal. The county's case shall include any exhibits or testimony in support of the employee's dismissal, which shall be made part of the record. 6. The board and Ms. Murray, Mr. Torres's attorney, may ask questions of the county's representatives and any of the other witnesses testifying before the board. 7. Upon close of evidence presented by the county, Mr. Torres will then present his case in opposition to his dismissal. This shall include any exhibits or testimony in support of his position, which shall be made part of the record. 8. The board and then Mr. Willoughby, the personnel attorney for the county, may ask questions of the witnesses. 9. Upon close of evidence presented by Mr. Torres, each party shall have the opportunity to present a closing statement. 10. The public hearing will then be closed. The board may take action on this appeal by voting to affirm Mr. Torres' dismissal, reverse it, or take the matter under advisement for a decision at a later date. If action is deferred to a later date, the board shall provide public notice of the meeting date at which action shall be taken. Only the 3 members of the personnel board shall be permitted to vote. 11. If the board finds the county's action was based on political, religious, or racial prejudice, or that the county administrator failed to follow the proper procedure outlined in Sussex County Code 29-15C, the employee shall be reinstated to his former position without loss of pay. In all other cases wherein the board does not sustain the action of the administrator, the board's findings and recommendations shall be advisory in nature, and the administrator may affirm the original action or modify it pursuant to the board's recommendations. See Sussex County Code 29-15F. At this point, would the parties like to make an opening? And first, Mr. Willoughby.
Should I approach the podium for this?
Yes, please.
It's relating to sequestering the witnesses, and we did discuss this on Friday as a possibility, and I told you that I would think about it over the weekend, and I am renewing the request to sequester the witnesses.
Mr. Willoughby?
This is an informal hearing. I don't see any basis for sequestering the witnesses. We've got members of the public here, obviously, so it seems to me this will all be open and that the witnesses should be here to hear the testimony.
Do you have any response to that?
Okay. I'll defer on that.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Barry Willoughby. I am the attorney for the county in connection with the decision to terminate Mr. Torres. Mr. Torres was a deputy sheriff in the sheriff's department. His job was primarily to serve papers for the county. The county decided to dismiss him for numerous reasons we'll talk about. The county administrator, Mr. Todd Lawson, who's here with me at the council table, was the person responsible under the county code for making that decision. And after an extensive investigation, he did conclude that a dismissal was warranted. The reasons for the dismissal are falsification of overtime, abuse of county equipment and time, and falsification of documentation. You have in front of you an extensive binder of documents, and what we've done there is put what lawyers call Bates numbers on those documents, and we've marked them SC for Sussex County, 1 through, I believe it's like 331, something in that, or 531, I'm sorry, in that range. SC number 9 is the actual dismissal letter and includes the specifics of the basis for the termination. What happened here is that an investigation was conducted on the allegations on the overtime requested by Mr. Torres following a county council meeting here in these chambers. Mr. Torres and other deputies in the department were apparently, according to him, ordered by the sheriff to come on county time at county expense in their county vehicles to attend a hearing in which at the a meeting at the end of which there was a public comment section, and the sheriff apparently had people, supporters, come in to oppose legislation that the county had supported. He ordered, according to Mr. Torres to come to the hearing in uniform on county time in a county vehicle and just sit in the back of the room along with the other deputies. After that, Mr. Torres apparently then went to Georgetown Middle School, where we believe his children attend. And then later that day, he put in for 3.5 hours, I'm sorry, of overtime. Mr. Lawson became concerned about that when that came to him for review, because obviously he knew that Mr. Torres had spent over 2 hours here in the room, basically sitting here watching the proceedings. At that point, an investigation was conducted by Karen Brewington, who's in the back here. She is the Director of Human Resources. And she did a two-month audit, February 27 to April 27, of Mr. Torres's time submissions. And what she did was she compared his daily log of what he did as part of his duties in the sheriff's office, which he keeps himself. He keeps those records himself. Against the GPS records. Now, I'm sure most of you are familiar with GPS today, but the county has a sophisticated system of GPS that's in all vehicles, not just the sheriff's department. Some 40 vehicles have these GPS systems, and they tell when the vehicle's turned on, when it's stopped and idling and not going anywhere. It tracks speed, tracks locations throughout the county. It's not an understatement to say that the investigation revealed an astounding level of misconduct by Mr. Torres. Just a point to start with as a macro overview. He became a full-time deputy sheriff in August of last year. From that date until his termination, he billed the county over $6,000 in overtime. That is many, 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 many multiples of anybody else in the department. The closest second is as the deputy chief, or chief deputy, I should say, who has administrative responsibilities. He billed about $1,400 in that same time frame. So that's sort of a macro overview. Then Ms. Brewington went through these records, the daily log, compared them to the GPS reports, and there were just amazing discrepancies. For example, Mr. Torres would report that he was serving papers in Bridgeville at 8 o'clock in the morning on certain occasions. And then, when you look at the GPS, he didn't start his vehicle until after 9 and didn't leave his home until like 9:45, things like that. So that happens repeatedly. And in the back of the binder, I believe it's SC 529 through 531, is a summary of the report that Ms. Brewington did, showing date by date comparison of his daily logs to the GPS reports. So in that time frame, now we're talking about just the audit time frame of 2 months, a conservative estimate of the amount of pay that Mr. Torres received that was inappropriate is about $700. I think it's $735, something in that range. And again, over the whole time of his employment, he had over $6,000 of overtime that he had been paid for. So after that investigation was done, the administration then approached the sheriff as well as the chief deputy for an explanation. The first explanation, and I don't know if this is going to continue or not, but the first explanation was that the GPS system is wrong, which is a pretty hard one to believe. There was no other reports of any other county employee who had problems with their GPSs, but that was the initial claim. And as hard to believe as that was, the county chose to fulfill its responsibilities in this kind of a matter by doing a test of Mr. Torres's vehicle. And Mr. Godwin drove with Mr. Torres. He drove Mr. Torres's vehicle, started out here in the circle, started and stopped the vehicle, went to different locations, recorded them, compared them to the GPS records, and they matched perfectly. So the issue of the GPS not working is kind of implausible to me. But the county didn't stop there. They did a second test. Ms. Brewington and Mr. Godwin took another vehicle, did the same thing. And again, the test matched perfectly. The third thing they did was to go to the vendor, and it's in your binder. I don't have the number in front of me right now, but there's a sworn statement from the vendor that the GPS for Mr. Torres's vehicle is accurate. So I don't know if they're going to continue that defense or not. If they do, I would submit to you it's just totally implausible. The second thing we've been hearing lately is that the GPS doesn't account for time, administrative time, that Mr. Torres spends either at home or running his vehicle. And even if that's true, if he was working at home, for example, that doesn't explain the discrepancies between serving a paper in Bridgeville at 8 o'clock in the morning and his vehicle starting at 9:45. So that just doesn't seem to wash either. But we expect that to be the latest kind of argument they will make. The GPS also showed a number of other, I'd say, disturbing things. And Mr. Torres went repeatedly to an address on Wilson Hill Road. And the county, frankly, doesn't know a whole lot about that. His representatives first said that he was visiting a mechanic there, except the mechanic's not a county mechanic. The county has its own service department for that. So he took the vehicle there for some unknown reason. The county followed up and called at an address and found out there was one mechanic, I should say, on that road, one certified commercial mechanic. The county called him, and he said he had never touched the vehicle, but lo and behold, he had witnessed Mr. Torres next door with another person, who I believe is going to be a witness, Mr. Chris Malik, in the mechanics work, shooting the breeze. I'll put it that way. So it's hard to see how that could be a legitimate activity. Other addresses show up. There's an address on Fruitland Avenue. We still don't know where Mr. Torres was doing there. He's never offered an explanation. His kid's school, Georgetown Middle School, shows up repeatedly, and all this time it was billed to the county. So based on that, Mr. Lawson concluded with Ms. Brewington's assistance that Mr. Torres had in fact falsified time and abused county time and equipment. One interesting thing that you'll see is that there's been a statement about some of the affidavits that they've put in talk about the idea that your vehicle can be running and you'll still be legitimately working, which we don't deny that. But what's shocking here is that in Mr. Torres's case, in the 8-week period of the audit, that's 320 working hours, he had 143 hours sitting in his vehicle idling that he put in for the county. So we think when you look at all the evidence that you're not going to make a problem concluding that Mr. Lawson made the correct decision. The county code, as Mr. Everett said, requires Mr. Lawson to make that decision. If in his judgment the employee's work or misconduct warrants it, then he is empowered to and should dismiss the employee. And that's what he did. It was done thoughtfully. You know, I expect we're going to hear some kind of a argument from the sheriff that it's a political agenda. There's no political agenda. This is just an employee who's engaged in misconduct. And so despite what, you know, they may claim about trying to create a political agenda, the facts are the facts. And the facts are going to show that there was serious misconduct here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Willoughby. Ms. Murray, would you like to make your opening now? Or?
Yeah.
Yes.
Fine, thank you.
Good morning. May it please the panel, my name is Julianne Murray of Murray Law, and I am here today on behalf of Deputy Ismael Torres. Deputy Pete Torres's first official warning that he was in trouble was a pre-termination letter stating that he had less than 48 hours to appear at a pre-termination meeting before two of the three people that were recommending him for termination. He wasn't allowed to bring counsel because it was informal. So he appeared with Sheriff Christopher, who was equally surprised that an employee in his command could be terminated without his knowledge or consent. Deputy Torres made a statement and submitted a letter denying all misconduct. He was told they would be in touch. Fast forward 5 days. He got a letter saying he was terminated. As if that wasn't bad enough, the last full paycheck he got 2 days later had a week of pay docked. No explanation, just the word docked. That's okay. His final paycheck for two administrative leave days would have his sick leave payout included, right? No. Even though county policy says when an employee leaves the county, they will be paid for their sick leave, he didn't get paid for it. Well, it must be because he was fired, right? That's not what the policy says. It states when an employee leaves, not when they leave, not how they leave, and being terminated is certainly leaving. Fast forward in time to last Friday when I received the binder with all of the GPS reports and time logs. Wow, termination must be justified if it's documented, doesn't it? Wrong. Someone recently said to me, right is right and wrong is wrong. Deputy Torres has proudly worked for the Sheriff of Sussex County, has kept meticulous time records in addition to his normal deputy duties. He's been called upon to translate Spanish to various county agencies like the County Council, the Revenue Division, Planning and Zoning, as well as routinely for the Delaware State Police. He's an active member of his church. He coaches softball. He volunteers with kids. When we met, Deputy Torres said to me, I don't know why they're after me, but I didn't do anything wrong. I believe him. So that means that the documents have to be wrong and or that the investigators didn't do a thorough job. That's why we're here today, to appeal to three people that aren't part of the county administration to show that the records are not as clear as the county is saying, that the investigation was cloaked in secrecy and not very thorough, and that an employee was fired with no warnings or reprimands against the wishes of his direct supervisor. Section 2915F states that the personnel board has the authority to reinstate an employee with no loss of pay if they disagree with the county administrator's finding of misconduct. It is only just, right, and fair that you overturn the termination of Deputy Torres and give Deputy Torres his job back.
Thank you, Ms. Murray. Mr. Willoughby, would you like to proceed with your case?
Yes. I'd like to call the Director of Human Resources, Karen Brillington.
Mr. Wilbeck, can you see that she's sworn in, please?
Would you please swear the witness?
Would you raise your right hand, please? Thank you. Do you swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Great, thanks.
Good. Could you state your full name for the record, please?
Karen Brewington.
And what is your position with the county?
Director of Human Resources.
And can you give us a summary of what your duties are as Director of Human Resources?
Sure. I manage the Human Resources Office. We handle various tasks, employee relations, new hires, terminations, benefits. That about sums it up. Payroll.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And tell me about your educational background.
I have about 15 years of human resources experience and a bachelor's degree in human resource management.
Okay, and what are some of the other employers you work for in human resources?
Previous to the county, I worked at the state of Delaware Department of Health and Social Services for approximately 2.5 years. I was the manager of human resources. Previous to that, I was in the public sector, and I worked there for about 18 years doing human resources. My last position was manager of compensation and benefits.
Okay, thank you. You understand we're here in connection with the termination of Deputy Ismael Torres, correct?
Yes.
And were you involved in the decision to investigate misconduct by Mr. Torres?
Yes, I was.
You have in front of you a document binder there?
Yes.
Now, were you the person primarily responsible for putting that together?
Yes, I was.
Okay. And the board members, I believe you also have that document binder in front of you. Can you, we'll go through these documents in a lot of detail in a few minutes, but can you sort of give us a general overview of what is in the binder that's been submitted to the board?
Yes. In chronological order, we have the pre-term letter dated 5/16/2012 from County Administrator Todd Lawson to Deputy Torres. We also have the response from Mr. Torres dated 5/18/2012 requesting his pre-termination hearing meeting. We also have the notes from the pre-term meeting that was held on 5/18/2012. His termination letter dated May 22nd, 2012. We have a memo from the previous county administrator, David Baker, in regards to the sheriff's policies and their duties. There is a fleet policy. Vehicle maintenance record of Deputy Torres's vehicle, an idle report, a public hearing notice, supporting documentation which refers to the GPS system and the GPS tests that were run on Deputy Torres's and another sheriff's deputy's car, some supporting emails, information on a Christopher Malik, overtime request from Deputy Torres, daily log sheets that Deputy Torres had filled out, the GPS reports that we received, and this covers the period of February the 27th, 2012 through April 27th, 2012. And the very last part of the binder is a summary of all of this information.
Thank you. Could you look at, it's SC number 9, and as I mentioned in the opening, we've done what's called bait stamping, so each page in the binder has a document number on it, so we can literally be on the same page. So could you look at SC number 9, please?
Yes.
And what is that document?
This document is the actual termination letter dated May 22nd, 2012 from County Administrator Todd Lawson to Mr. Ismael Torres.
Okay. And without reading it verbatim, could you summarize the reasons for Deputy Torres's termination?
Sure. County Administrator Todd Lawson received an overtime request from Deputy Torres, his department, requesting overtime for March the 27th, 2012. County Administrator Todd Lawson realized that during that week on March 27th, that Deputy Torres attended a council meeting, and he was in there for approximately 2.75 hours. 3.5 hours was turned in for overtime. So from there, County Administrator Todd Lawson decided that he wanted to open up an audit to take a look at the records. Mm-hmm. From there, we pulled information from February 27th through April 27th with documentation from the Sheriff's Office and also from our GPS system. What we saw was there was a huge discrepancy in the GPS reports, Deputy Torres's daily log sheets where he stated he was certain places at certain times, and total number of hours and overtime submitted. Based on all of that information, it warranted termination.
Okay. I want to just go off order a little bit here because I wanted to ask you some questions about what we heard in the opening statement that Mr. Torres was somehow caught by surprise and wasn't given an opportunity to respond to issues. So just for a brief digression, am I correct? There was a meeting on May 3rd with yourself and the sheriff and the chief deputy, among others?
Yes, that is correct. And County Administrator Todd Lawson, Chief Deputy Lineweaver, Sheriff Christopher, and myself met in regards to the discrepancies in the time.
And then did you thereafter meet with Mr. Torres himself about these issues?
Yes, that meeting took place at 10 a.m. on May 7th.
Okay, so those meetings were several weeks before the actual dismissal took place on May 22nd.
That's correct.
And was Mr. Torres given the opportunity to tell the county anything he wanted to tell them about the results of the investigation?
Yes. During that meeting on May 7th, several questions were asked. Chief Deputy Lineweaver answered most of those questions. I did direct some questions to Deputy Torres to get him to answer, and I really didn't get a clear answer.
Okay. Did he ever tell you where he was going on Fruitland Avenue, for example?
He did not.
Did not. All right. Well, let's go back now. You're familiar with the terms exempt and non-exempt employees?
Yes.
Can you tell us what that means?
Yes. Based on the Fair Labor Standard Act, FLSA, there's two categories. There's an exempt employees, which are exempt from overtime, and there are non-exempt employees who do receive overtime. They are considered hourly employees. Those individuals, the non-exempt, are paid after working 40 hours in a work week at time and a half, any time above 40 hours.
Okay. Now, let's be clear. Under the statute, when you say 40 hours in a work week, is that working time, in other words, time spent actually working, or does that include things like vacation time, sick leave, things like that?
It must be time working. So, for example, if a person had vacation or sick time during that week, that would not count towards the 40 working hours to receive the time and a half.
Okay. So, in other words, if you have to have actually 40 productive hours before you get time and a half.
That's correct.
And you don't necessarily have to go to the page right now, but as I remember the form for overtime submission, it actually clearly states on there that you must report leave you've taken that week so the county can know whether or not you've met that 40-hour threshold. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. So was Mr. Torres an exempt or a non-exempt employee?
He is a non-exempt employee.
So that means he gets overtime if he works in excess of 40 hours in a work week?
That's correct.
At working hours, and that's time and a half?
That is correct.
Okay. All right. We're going to go through this in a lot of detail, but I wanted to just call everyone's attention the total amount of overtime that Mr. Torres has actually billed and been paid by the county since his employment. And as I understand it, he became a full-time employee on about August of 2011?
Yes, August 1st, 2011.
August 1st, 2011. Do you have a document that summarizes the amount of overtime that he was paid?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Could you put that up on the screen, Chip? And Todd, do you have extra copies? Could you hand those out to the board members and to opposing counsel, please? Chip, could you scroll it up so we could see the bottom, the summary there? There we go. Okay, it's probably a tough angle for you, Karen, but can you just go through? You've got the paper copy, and I believe that the personnel board members have as well. Tell us how much money Mr. Torres was paid since he became a full-time employee in August 1 of 2011 in overtime.
For the period of August the 5th, 2011, through May 25th, 2012, Deputy Torres turned in and received over $6,000, $6,113.68 in overtime.
So that's in addition to his salary, he received an additional $6,000 in overtime.
That is correct.
Okay. Now, looking at the other individuals here, there's Deputy Wilson. Deputy Wilson is another sheriff's deputy in the department, correct?
That's correct.
And there's a Deputy Smith?
Yes.
And then there's the Chief Deputy, Mr. Lineweaver.
That's correct.
And now, as I understand, the Chief Deputy is kind of the head administrative person in the sheriff's office.
Yes, he's supervisor, so to speak.
Supervisor of the deputies. Okay, so he's gotten $1,300 in overtime.
Yes.
Okay. The other people who are employed presently in Mr. Torres' position, how much overtime did they bill to the county during that same time period?
Deputy Wilson was paid $405.90, and Deputy Smith, $929.30.
Okay. So that's, well, even if you include Chief Lineweaver, that's four times the amount for Mr. Torres, and if you don't include him, it's something like six times?
That's correct.
Okay. All right, let's go through the details about the investigation and what you found.
Okay.
And I believe you have in front of you the binder. And before we go through the actual details of that report, I believe you talked already about this, but if you could go through it again. What led to the investigation was the fact that Mr. Torres was here for 2 hours for a council meeting and then billed overtime to the council, to the county that day?
That is correct.
Okay. And did you also find that that same day he went to his children's school, apparently?
Yes.
And that was also billed to the county?
Yes.
Okay. All right, well, let's go through. I believe the summary is 529 to 531. You may have a paper copy there in front of you, separate from the binder. And can you describe for us what this document is?
Okay. This summary is an audit that was done for the period of February 27, 2012. Through April 27, 2012.
Okay. And can you, Chip, are you able to put that up on the screen? This is SC-529. Is this document here? Yeah, that's it. And again, I know it's a tough angle for you to look at the screen, so you'll have to look at your document. But just take us through, first of all, the headings, you know, the top of the row, what you were demonstrating there, kind of column by column, so we can understand what you're doing.
Okay. The first column denotes the actual work week. You will see the very first section is February the 27th, 2012, March 2nd, 2012. So for each day within that work week, the next column would show the daily log sheet that Deputy Torres filled out and submitted into his department, which we received from Chief Deputy Lineweaver, his start time during the day.
And just let me stop you. So the daily log sheet, that's something that Deputy Torres completed and submitted through his supervisor to the county.
That is correct.
So that's his document.
That's correct.
And is that his record of what he did each of those days?
Yes. The daily log sheet provides his start time, his end time, and all the places that he went during that day, the times, the locations, who he served, attempts made.
Okay.
To serve.
All right. Can you just take us through the rest of the column so we understand what the chart?
Sure. The end time is the time that he commenced his day, his total hours for that day. The next column is the overtime that was submitted for that day on separate overtime sheets. The next section is in light blue. That is the GPS reports that we pulled off of his vehicle.
Okay, so let me stop you there. So the GPS reports are county documents. I believe Deputy Administrator Mr. Godwin's responsible for overseeing that system.
Yes, he is.
Is that correct? And so you were able to track what Mr. Torres was doing by pulling those GPS reports. Is that fair?
That is correct.
Okay. So now tell us what else you put in the columns here.
Okay. So we listed the time that the car actually started in that first column.
So let me stop you. This GPS can actually tell us when the car starts.
When the car turns on.
Okay, and yes. Then so is that, and if it's sitting there and running, is that called idle time?
That is called idle stop time if it's sitting there stopping and idling.
Okay, so go ahead. Tell us about the rest of the chart.
The next column is the time that Deputy Torres' vehicle left home.
So you're able to tell from the GPS not only when the car starts, but when it starts moving.
Starts moving, correct.
Okay.
The next four columns are idle time. Recorded in minutes of times, the first column where Deputy Torres spent at home idling. The next column is idle time spent at Wilson Hill Road, which is an address that he frequents often. And the next column is idle time spent at Fruitland Avenue, which is time, again, an address that he frequents often. And the other minutes are various minutes that he spent different places, such as his mother's house or 13 School Lane, which is Georgetown Middle School.
Okay.
There's a total number of hours that we calculated from his car starting to the end time, and any time that was used as personal time that we identified just of these addresses. So this is a very conservative approach as just these addresses.
Right.
There's a comment section which does include various things, and we'll go through those in more depth. The last two columns are the financial audit, where we looked at the difference of his hours that he submitted and the total hours that we calculated and the difference in the earnings that he was overpaid.
Okay, so, and you mentioned that was a conservative estimate.
Yes.
What is the conservative estimate of the amount that he was overpaid by your analysis?
The conservative amount in this summary shows just shy of $800, $784.89.
And that's, just for the record, that's SC-531. Is that the page number for that?
That is correct.
Okay. All right. Now, you've got, that is the summary, as I understand it. Now, am I correct that the binder has all of the backup, the daily logs, the specific GPSs, everything that backs up that summary?
Yes.
So that's all there for the personnel board to
yes,
look at?
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right, let's go through.
Excuse me, Mr. Willoughby. At times when you turn towards a witness, I have a difficulty hearing you.
Okay.
Mr. Guy, is it possible to turn the angle of either the mic or the podium?
I'll try to move over this way a little bit and see if I can speak up some.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. All right. Let's go through the summary chart, and let's review with the personnel board some specific instances where there was a finding of a discrepancy on your analysis. And let's start with February 27. Can you review that date with us, please?
Sure. On February the 27th, an overtime report was submitted with 4 hours of overtime on March the 2nd. On February the 27th, if you turn to SC-83 in your binder, you will see that Deputy Torres's daily log sheet reports that his start time is 8 a.m. and his time that he ends his day is 4 o'clock p.m. for a total of 8 hours.
Okay.
And various things, you know, his locations that he goes to, the person served, and the times are listed on this daily log sheet. If you look to SC-85, you will look at the GPS report where you will see that Mr. Torres's car started at 9:46 a.m.
Okay, so just let me be clear. The daily log that he submitted said he was out serving papers at 8 a.m.?
He stated that he was in Bridgeville. It was no service. A homeowner advised that the subject does not live at that address in Bridgeville.
Okay, but in fact, the GPS shows that the vehicle was not started until 9:46 a.m.?
That is correct.
And didn't leave his driveway until 9:07 a.m.?
10:07.
I'm sorry. Yeah. That would be tough to leave without it being started. 10:07. Okay.
Correct.
So between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m., what were the entries on the daily log that Mr. Torres completed and submitted?
He stated that he was in Bridgeville at 8, and no service homeowner advised that the subject does not live at this address. He was in Greenwood at 8:30, no service, subject does not live at this address. 8:39, Bridgeville, no service, subject is a service evader. 8:55, Bridgeville, no service, subject is evading service. And he was in Greenwood at 10:30 via a phone conference call.
Okay. Now, looking at your chart, there's a reference there to Wilson Hill Road. And it says, looks like 50 minutes. Can you explain that to us, please?
Yes. Mr. Torres arrived at Wilson Hill Road where his at 12:54 p.m. where his vehicle was turned off. You will see that on page 86, 87, 88, where his vehicle actually moves at 1:46 p.m.
So he was there for 50 minutes?
That's correct.
Does his daily log show that he was at Wilson Hill Road at any point that day?
It does not. It states that he was in Bridgeville attempting to serve papers, and then at Troop 5 in Bridgeville.
All right. Now, there's also a listing there, idle time for Fruitland Avenue. Do you see that?
I do.
And how much time that day did he spend at Fruitland Avenue?
32 minutes.
Okay. And that means the vehicle is running, and he, but it's not moving.
That is correct.
And did he ever explain to you who he was visiting at Fruitland Avenue?
He did not.
Okay. Let's go on to the next date. I have got February 29 as the next date we're going to take a look at.
Okay, this is page 105 in your binder. The daily log sheet for Deputy Torres that he filled out states that he began his day at 8 o'clock a.m. and finished his day up at 4 o'clock p.m. for a total of 8 hours. The next column, his GPS, his car started at 8:29 a.m. at his home address and left home at 8:39 a.m.
Okay, so for that day, although he reported he started working at 8 a.m., he actually left his home at 8:39 a.m.?
That's correct.
And does that Fruitland Avenue address show up?
Yes, it does.
Okay, does the Fruitland Avenue address appear on his daily log anywhere?
It shows up on the not on the daily log sheet, only the GPS.
Right, so he didn't report on his daily log that he'd been at Fruitland Avenue.
He did not.
But the GPS report showed that he was. Correct?
Correct.
All right. Let's look at March 2nd, I believe it is. Yes.
Page 124 in your binder. Daily log sheet shows that Deputy Torres began his day at 8 a.m. and finished at 8 p.m. He submitted 4 hours of overtime for that day. His car started at 7:37 a.m. and left home at 7:55 a.m. At that point...
So just to be clear, he submitted 12 total hours that day, 4 of which were overtime?
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay. He also returned back home for 40 minutes with his vehicle idling, and additional time was spent at Wilson Hill Road idling for 26 minutes. There was a ride by Fruitland Avenue again, but there was no stop at this point.
So just so we're clear, so that means that through the GPS system, you could see that he drove past this Fruitland Avenue address, but did not stop that day. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So let's look at another date, March 9. Could you review that with us, please?
Sure. That would be page 185 in your binder. The daily log sheet states that Deputy Torres began his day at 7 a.m. and commenced at 3 p.m. Deputy Torres's vehicle did start at 6:48 a.m. and ran idle and left his home at 7:27 a.m.
And what does his daily log sheet say he was doing during that time, starting at 7 a.m.?
At 7:05, it states he was in Ellendale, that he posted at a location. 7:18, he was in Ellendale. He had made a second attempt, unsuccessful. Then at 7:36, he was in Ellendale. States this other person, no service subject does not work here. This is a residence, not a business. 7:55, he was in Lincoln serving paperwork.
So his daily log reported he was serving papers and making postings at a time when the vehicle had not left the driveway?
That's correct.
And how far is approximately is Ellendale from Georgetown?
15, 20 minutes.
Okay. All right. And this also reports that he stopped at his mother's residence?
Yes, that's correct. He was there for 30 minutes.
30 minutes. And how did you know that address was his mother's residence?
The address was submitted on his emergency contact.
Okay.
Human resources.
All right. Let's go on to March 19. Could you review that date with us, please?
Page 198 in your binder. The daily log sheet states that Deputy Torres began his workday at 7 a.m. and ended at 5 p.m. He submitted 2 hours of overtime for that day. The GPS shows that his vehicle was turned on at 7:19 and sat in his driveway idle until 8:05 when he left home.
Okay. And where did he go when he left home?
Once he had left home, this is on page 201. He had left home, and then he had returned back home for 45 minutes, where his vehicle sat idle again for 45 minutes.
Okay. Was there other idle time shown on the GPS report?
Yes, there was 1 hour and 15 minutes where his vehicle was turned off at Georgetown Middle School.
Does his daily log show any official duties at Georgetown Middle School during that hour and 15 minutes?
It does not.
Now, if a county employee has a need to attend a school conference or something like that, are there leaves that they can take to do that without charging the county as regular pay time?
Yes. He could use compensatory time. He could use vacation time. Do that or flex his time.
Did he Deputy Torres put in for any leave time of any kind for that hour and 15 minutes that he was at the Georgetown Middle School that does not show up on his daily log?
He did not.
Okay, let's go on to the next date, March 20.
Page 209 in your binder. His daily log sheet states that he began his day at 7 a.m., ended at 8 p.m. He submitted 5 hours of overtime for that day. His car started at 8:42 a.m. Did not leave home until 8:56 a.m.
And what does it? Can you tell us what he reported on his daily log that he was doing,
yes.
Starting at 7 a.m. according to his self-report, even though his vehicle didn't start till just about 9 a.m.
7:45, his daily log sheet states that he made an attempt in Bridgeville to serve papers. At 7:58, he made an attempt again in Bridgeville. No service subject has moved. At 8:05, he stated that he served a person in Bridgeville. He has Bridgeville for 8:18, 8:30, 8:45. And then it states that he is at the West Complex in Georgetown at 9 a.m.
So, in fact, the GPS shows that he didn't leave his driveway until 8:56, but he's reported on his daily log all these attempted services that he reports?
That is correct.
Okay, and on that day, he put in for, is it 5 hours of overtime?
5 hours.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
Let's look at the next date. March 21.
Page 226 in your binder states that he began working at 7 a.m., ended his time at 3 p.m. His vehicle on page 227 shows that he started his vehicle at 9:50 a.m. and left his driveway at 10:18 a.m.
Okay, so he reports on his daily log that he started working at 7 a.m., and does it say what he was doing during that time?
States he was in Bridgeville at 7:05, 7:16 Bridgeville, 7:20 Bridgeville. A second attempt was made at 7:30 in Bridgeville. Another attempt where subject has moved and does not live at that residence in Bridgeville at 7:45. 7:58, he left a card. An attempt was made in Bridgeville. 8:26, a second attempt made in Bridgeville. 8:39, an attempt was made in Bridgeville. 9 o'clock, third last attempt was made in Bridgeville. And then he was at Georgetown at 10:30 at the post office, Superior, and Family Court.
Okay, so all those times he reported that he had attempted but not made service, correct?
That is correct.
But in fact, we know from the GPS that he didn't even leave his driveway until 10:18?
That is correct.
And his log doesn't show any claim that he was working at home between 7 a.m. And 10 a.m.
It does not.
Okay. All right. And just to finish out that day, it looks like there's another report of idle time at Fruitland Avenue.
That is correct, for 14 minutes.
Okay. And as you said, he put in for overtime that day?
On the 21st, it stated that he worked 8 hours.
8 hours, I'm sorry.
And our total came to 6.5 hours.
Okay. And let's go now to the next date, March 22nd.
Page 236 in your binder. His daily log sheet reports that he began his day at 7 a.m. and ended at 6 o'clock p.m. He submitted 3 hours of overtime. His car started on the GPS report at 9:01 a.m. and left his home at 9:20 a.m.
Okay, so he starts his self-report on his daily log of what he's doing starts at 7 a.m.
That's correct.
But we know the vehicle actually didn't leave the driveway until 9:20 a.m.
Yes, that is correct.
What does he report on his daily log that he was allegedly doing between 7 a.m. and 9:20 a.m.?
7:29, he is in Ellendale. 7:35, Ellendale, no service subject does not live at this address. 7:55, Milton, no service subject does not live at this address. 8:05, Ellendale. 8:18, Lincoln. 8:30, message left, Lincoln. 8:45, Milford. 9:05, he posted in Milford. And 9:29, another no service outside Sussex County limits. And then 9:45, he was still in Milford. Message left.
All right. And let's go to the next date, March 23. Could you review that date with us, please?
March 23rd, the daily log sheet reports that he began his day at 8 a.m., finished at 6 p.m. He submitted 2 hours of overtime. Daily log sheet shows that his car started at 9:48 a.m., left the driveway at 9:59 a.m.
Okay, so he reported that he began work at 8 a.m., but in fact, he didn't leave his driveway until just about 10 a.m.
That's correct.
Now, what does his daily log show that he says he was doing during that time?
Shows him in Bridgeville from 8:06, 8:15, 8:37, 9 o'clock, 9:15, 9:30, and some of those were Troop 5. The others stated that he had made attempts but were unsuccessful.
So he didn't report that he was working at home. He reported he was at specific locations attempting to serve papers?
That is correct.
And that day he put in for 2 hours of overtime?
He did.
Okay. All right, let's go to the next date. I've got March 26.
.263 in your binder. The daily log sheet states that he began his day at 8 a.m., concluded at 4 p.m. with a total of 8 hours. His car started at 10:22 a.m., left home at 10:30 a.m.
Okay, so just let me be clear. So he reported he started at 8 a.m., but in fact the GPS shows that he didn't leave his home until 2.5 hours later at 10:30 a.m.?
That's correct.
And what did he report on his daily log that he was doing between 8 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.?
He was in Bridgeville at 8:30, where he left a message, 8:48 in Bridgeville, 9 o'clock Bridgeville, 9:19 Bridgeville, 9:30 in Greenwood, where attempts were made.
Okay. Let's go to the next date, March 27. Now, am I correct? That's the date of the council meeting where he appeared here in uniform?
That is correct.
All right.
March 27th, his daily log sheet shows that he began his day at 8 a.m. and concluded at 7:30 p.m. His overtime he submitted was 3.5 hours. His car started at 7:37 a.m., left home at 8:03 a.m. He then was in council meeting for 2.75 hours. And that time was 9:37 a.m. to 12:27. After leaving council, he went to Georgetown Middle School at 12:42 p.m., where he turned his vehicle off and turned it back on at 1:21 p.m.
All right, now, did the GPS show that he was actually here at the Circle in Georgetown that day as he actually was?
Yes.
So the GPS accurately showed that he was here at the council meeting?
He actually, the GPS didn't really state that as much as the County Administrator Lawson had seen him in here with other deputy sheriffs, and also the video shows that.
Right, but the GPS shows that the vehicle was brought to this location.
Yes, it was turned off at 9:41 at
okay.
this location.
All right, and then on that day, you have a listing of idle time for Fruitland Avenue. Is that correct?
That is correct. Fruitland Avenue was 18 minutes idling.
Okay. And then in the comments section, I see that there's a reference to 41 School Lane, Georgetown Middle School, 38 minutes. What does that show?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
I'm sorry, it was in the comments section now, and there's a reference to the Georgetown Middle School?
Yes, for 38 minutes, and the council meeting for 2.75, which totals 3.13 in the other column.
So he put in for 3.1, he had 3.13 hours at the council meeting and at the middle school, and he charged the county for he attempted to charge the county, I should say, for 3.5 hours of overtime?
That is correct.
Okay, let's go on to the next entry, the March 28th.
March 28th, page 288 in your binder. The daily log sheet shows Deputy Torres began his day at 7 a.m. and ended at 3 p.m. His daily log sheet has his vehicle turning on at 10:01 a.m. and leaving his driveway at 10:24 a.m.
Okay, so now he's reported he started work at 7 a.m. on that day.
Yes.
But we can see from the GPS he actually left his driveway at 10:24 a.m. What does he report that he was doing between 7 a.m. and 10:24 a.m.?
Attempt was made, card left in Bridgeville at 8:15. Attempt made, card left Bridgeville 8:15. Attempt made, card left Bridgeville 8:35. Attempt made, card left Bridgeville 9 o'clock. Second attempt made, card left Bridgeville at 9:30. Was served paperwork in Greenwood at 10 o'clock. Posted in Greenwood at 10:15. Made a fifth last attempt, unable to serve in Greenwood at 10:35. An attempt made, no such address, Greenwood 10:55.
So again, he gave specific locations where he was allegedly serving or trying to serve papers during that time frame that we know the vehicle was still in his driveway.
That's correct.
Okay. Let's look at the next date, and this is March 29, and that says vacation. Now why is that significant in this analysis?
We had asked for this date, the daily log sheet. It did not come to us because it was missing. And when we had requested it, Chief Deputy Lineweaver and Sheriff Christopher had stated that he actually was sick that day.
So wait a second, just let me be clear. So when you first asked for that information, it was reported to you by Chief Deputy Lineweaver that Mr. Torres was sick that day.
At first, they were not sure what was going on for that day. So they went back and did some research and found out that he actually was not there that day. And they had stated that he was sick that day and that they would submit a leave slip in for him. We received a leave slip on May 4th, 2012 for the March 29th date for 8 hours of vacation time.
Okay, let me just, now you got the leave slip on, is it May 4?
Yes.
And am I right, there was a meeting on May 3rd with the chief deputy and the sheriff about the subject?
That is correct.
So the leave slip appears the day after that meeting?
Yes.
And what does the leave slip say? Does it say that Mr. Torres was ill?
8 hours of annual time.
Okay, is that vacation time?
That's vacation.
Okay, all right. So now let's go to the next date and the March 30 date and review what's there. Then I've got some questions for you about how this plays into his entitlement or lack of entitlement to overtime.
Okay.
So let's go through March 30 first.
March 30th?
Yes, please.
March 30th, okay. His daily log sheet states that he began his day at 8 a.m., he ended at 4 o'clock p.m., that he reported that he worked 8 hours that day. His vehicle started at 7:26 a.m., left his driveway at 8:32 a.m. You will see that on page 298, 299, 300 of your binder. He then drove to 13 School Lane, Georgetown Middle School, where his vehicle was turned off, and that is on page 301. At 8:39.
And how long was he at the middle school?
He was at the school for 1 hour and 2 minutes.
Does his daily log reflect that he was at the middle school for any business purpose?
No, it states that he was in Bridgeville.
Okay, and Did he deduct any time from his time submissions for leave, as we talked about before, for personal business for his one of his children, for example, at the school?
No, he did not.
Okay, so he just submitted a full day and didn't deduct that hour from the school?
That's correct.
Okay, all right. And during the reported he began at 8 a.m. We know his vehicle left the driveway at 8:30 a.m. Where did he say he was in that time frame? His daily log?
He stated at 8 o'clock he was at the West Complex building doing paperwork. At 9 o'clock he was in Bridgeville through all the way up until noon, where he was at Greenwood.
All right. Now, looking at the subtotal for that week, you have noted all overtime should have been reported as straight time. Could you explain that to us, please?
Yes. The 3.5 hours that was submitted for overtime at time and a half for all time worked over 40 hours was reported inappropriately. The time for March the 29th, had we had known that he was not there that day, that was not a productive working day on that day, he would have not received any overtime at time and a half. It would have been 3.5 hours of straight time overtime.
So this goes to that concept of working time versus other time.
Any time that you are working productive hours, so working 40 hours above that, gets paid at time and a half. If you are to take any time off within that work week, then any additional time would be paid at straight time, since it would not be productive hours worked over 40.
Okay. So the absence of the leave request on March 28th, did that make a difference? I'm sorry, March 29th.
Yes. March 27th, the overtime was 3.5 hours. Yes, so, that would have made a difference.
So by omitting that sheet, he got time and a half instead of straight time?
Correct.
Okay, let's go on to the next entry, April 2nd.
April 2nd, page 311 in your binder, states that his daily log sheet reported he began work at 8 a.m., ended at 4 p.m. His vehicle on the GPS report states that it was turned on at 9:35 a.m. and left his driveway at 9:45 a.m.
Okay, so he reported he started work at 8 a.m., but in fact we know from the GPS that he didn't leave his driveway until 9:45 a.m.,
yes.
Correct? Now, could you tell us what he reported that he was doing during that 2-hour and 45-minute time frame?
Third attempt was made in Bridgeville at 8:55. Third attempt was made in Bridgeville 9:15. Fourth attempt made, no service subject is evading service in Bridgeville at 9:35. Third attempt made, no service subject is evading service Bridgeville 9:48. And he served someone in Bridgeville at 10:10.
All right, so again, he didn't report on his daily log that he was working at home. He gave specific addresses where he said he was either serving papers or attempting to serve papers.
That is correct.
All right, and I see that idle time at Fruitland Avenue also shows up for a short period of time that day?
Yes, 4 minutes.
Okay, let's go to the next date, April 3rd. Can you review that one with us, please?
April 3rd, the daily log sheet. This is on page 320. Daily log sheet states that he began his day at 8 a.m., finished at 4 p.m. His GPS reports his vehicle was turned on at 11:07 a.m., left his driveway at 11:18 a.m.
Okay, now, so here we have him reporting he began work at 8 a.m., but we know his vehicle actually didn't leave the driveway until 11:18 a.m. What did he report that he was doing during that time frame?
Fourth last attempt in Bridgeville at 8:45, no service subject has been evading service. Fourth last attempt, no service subject has been evading service, Bridgeville 8:45. Greenwood 9:30. Fourth attempt, card left, Milford 10 o'clock. Third attempt made, message left, no service subject has been evading service, Lincoln at 10:35.
Okay.
Shows his next entry at the West Complex in Georgetown at 12:09.
Okay. So again, he was reporting specific locations where he was allegedly serving or attempting to serve papers.
Yes.
Okay. Now there's also a note for idle time at Fruitland Avenue.
37 minutes.
So again, that means he had his vehicle running while he was in that at that Fruitland Avenue area, and so the GPS was able to track that.
Yes.
All right, let's go to the next date, April 4th.
April 4th, page 328 in your binder. Daily log sheet states that he began his time at 8 a.m., finished at 4 p.m. for a total of 8 hours. The GPS report states that he started his vehicle at 8:56 a.m. and left his driveway at 9:47 a.m.
All right, so again, he's reported he started working at 8 a.m. We know he didn't actually leave his driveway till 9:47. What did he report that he was doing during that time?
He was doing paperwork at the West Complex at 8:30. He was working, doing vehicle maintenance, Georgetown, 10 o'clock.
Okay, so again, he reported that he was at the West Complex is where the sheriff's office is located?
Yes.
So he didn't report that he was at home. He reported that he was in the office.
That's correct.
Okay. And are there some idle times that show up that day?
Yes. Once he had left home at 9:47, he proceeded to School Lane, Georgetown Middle School. That was at 9:53. His vehicle was shut off at 9:54, turned back on at 10:11. He then left the school, went back to his home at 10:20, and this is on page 331 of your binder, where he sat until 11:04 for 44 minutes. Then,
so that means he was at home with the vehicle running for 44 minutes?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. And then there's an idle time at Wilson Hill Road?
Yes. He arrived, this is page 333 in your binder, he arrived at 11:37 a.m. at Wilson Hill Road. His vehicle remained idle there for 42 minutes, where it turned back on at 12:19 p.m.
Okay, and there's also an entry for other, other minutes for idle time. What's that?
That was the 18 minutes at the school.
At the school,
earlier
okay.
That day.
All right. So let's now look at April 5.
Okay. April 5th, page 340 in your binder states, the daily log sheet states that 8 a.m. he started his day, 8 o'clock p.m. he ended. He submitted 4 hours of overtime for that day. His GPS states that his vehicle was turned on at 9:45 a.m., left his driveway at 10 o'clock a.m.
So again, the daily log shows a start time of 8 a.m., but the GPS shows he actually left his home at 2 hours later at 10 a.m.
That's correct.
Okay, and did he report what he was doing during that 2 hours?
He stated he was doing paperwork at the West Complex building in Georgetown at 8:16 a.m.
Okay, so he reported he was actually in the office, even though his vehicle hadn't left his home until 10 o'clock.
Yes, that's correct.
All right, and then you reported some other idle time. Can you tell us about that?
He had a total of 1 hour and 17 minutes of idle time at his home address. He also had 10 minutes of idle time at the Fruitland Avenue address and 23 minutes at the school, Georgetown Middle School.
Okay. Now, did he report in his daily log being at the Georgetown Middle School for any business-related purpose?
He did not.
Did he report being at the Fruitland Avenue address that keeps showing up for being there for any business purpose?
He did not.
All right, let's look at April 13. Could you review that date with us, please?
This is on page 407 in your binder. The daily log sheet states that he started his day at 8 a.m. and ended at 6:30 p.m. He reported 2.5 hours of overtime. His car started, per the GPS report, at 10:38 a.m., left his driveway at 11:23 a.m.
So we have a little over 3 hours there where he says he was working, but in fact, we know his vehicle had not left the driveway.
That's correct.
And what did he report in his daily log that he was doing during those 3 hours?
He stated at 8:45 he was at Troop 5 in Bridgeville, 9:18 Bridgeville, another attempt made 9:45 Bridgeville, a second attempt 9:45 in Bridgeville, a third attempt in Bridgeville at 9:35, another service in Bridgeville 10 o'clock, and Greenwood, a card left attempt made at 11 o'clock.
So again, he's not reporting that he's working at home. He's reporting that he's doing specific activities on behalf of the sheriff, correct?
That is correct.
And that day he put in for how much overtime?
2.5 hours.
Okay. So he actually didn't leave his home till after 11, and he billed the county for 2.5 hours of overtime. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right, let's go to the next page on the summary. And the next date I had to review was April 19.
Okay, page 453 in your binder. The daily log sheet states that he began his day at 8 a.m., concluded at 6 o'clock p.m. The GPS report states that he started his vehicle at 9:46 a.m., left his driveway at 9:50 a.m., and he had submitted 2 hours of overtime for that day.
Okay, so again, he's reported he started at 8 a.m., but we know the vehicle actually didn't leave until 9:50 a.m.
That's correct.
And what did he report he was doing during those 2 hours and 50 minutes?
Paperwork at the West Complex in Georgetown from 8:30.
Okay, so he didn't report he was working at home. He reported he was at the office.
That is correct.
Okay. Now, I see a note there. It says received DLS on 6/4/12. Can you tell us what that means?
Yes, this daily log sheet was missing. We requested this information from Chief Deputy Lineweaver. He stated that it was MIA and that he would talk with Sheriff Christopher to find out, you know, where this was. We did end up receiving a copy of the daily log sheet for 4/19/2012 just last week, June 4th, 2012.
All right. Now let's go to the next date, April 20. Can you review that date with us, please?
Page 467 in your binder. The daily log sheet states that he began his day at 8 a.m. He concluded at 4 o'clock p.m. His daily, his GPS states that his car started at 9:37 a.m., left his driveway at 9:49 a.m. And during that time, there was 23 minutes spent at the Fruitland Avenue idling.
Now, did he report on his daily log what he was doing between 8 a.m. or allegedly doing between 8 a.m. and 9:49 a.m.?
Yes. 8:30, he was in Bridgeville in serving a defendant. And then from 8:45, he was at Troop 5 in Bridgeville. 10 o'clock, he was in Georgetown at the sheriff's office, where he was working on family, Chancery, Superior Court, and Post Office. Court of Common Pleas.
Okay, let's look at April 23rd.
April 23rd is page 476 in your binder. The daily log sheet states that he began his day at 8 a.m., concluded at 7 o'clock p.m. He submitted 3 hours of overtime for that day. The GPS reports that his car started at 9:04 a.m. and left home at 10:14 a.m.
Okay, so that means the vehicle was running in his driveway on during that time period, but not going anywhere.
That's correct.
Okay, now he said he started work at 8 a.m. What did he report in his daily log that he was doing?
Stated he was in Greenwood at 10 o'clock. There's really nothing else that shows up on here except he was in Greenwood at 10 o'clock, and then Del Mar and Greenwood at 10:30.
Okay, and again, so he's reporting that he was at a location serving papers or attempting to serve papers for the sheriff, not working at home.
Yes.
And there's a idle time report there. Could you, you know, review that with us?
Yes. 40 minutes was spent at Wilson Hill Road. His daily log sheet stated at the time he was at Wilson Hill Road, he was in Greenwood and Lincoln, which his vehicle got to Wilson Hill Road at 11:55 a.m. That's on page 479. Sat idle, page 480, until 12:35 p.m.
So the daily log doesn't show the Wilson Hill Road address at all?
It does not.
Okay, and in fact, when you look at the daily log, he reports being at different locations when the GPS shows that he was actually at Wilson Hill Road.
Yes, that's correct.
And he put in for 3 hours overtime that day?
3 hours.
Okay, let's go to the next date, April 25.
On April 25th, the daily log sheet states that he began his day at 8:30 a.m. and concluded at 4:30 p.m. for a total of 8 hours. He started his vehicle at 8:20 a.m. and left at 8:20, concluded his day at 4:56. There is an address here, 22538 Delaware 62, where he was at for 2.25 hours. This address, which is on page 506, stated that he got there at 2:23 p.m. and his vehicle ran idle all the way through to page 508 till 3:48. It was then shut off at 3:50, turned back on at 4:48, and then went home, where his daily log sheet states that during that time he was checking paperwork and cleaning his vehicle at the West Complex building.
So he reported, was it 2.25 hours at that that location you just described, Delaware 62?
Yes, that's correct.
Does his daily log record that he was at Delaware 62 during any time during the day?
No, it shows the West Complex building.
Okay. And this is the last one we'll review. April 26. Can you review that with us?
April 26, the daily log sheet shows that he started his vehicle at 8:30 a.m. He he began his day at 8:30 a.m. He ended his day at 4:30 p.m. The GPS states that his vehicle was turned on at 9:20 a.m. and left home at 9:20 a.m. And he concluded his day at 4:36 p.m.
Okay, and did were there discrepancies there on that date?
It shows on his daily log sheet that he was doing paperwork at the West Complex building at 8:45 a.m.
But his vehicle didn't leave his home until 9:20 a.m.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, now we covered this briefly before, but on the right-hand column there, you summarize the total amount of overpayment that Mr. Torres received based on your analysis of his daily log sheets in comparison to what the GPS shows that the actual locations he was at. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And you said earlier that that's a conservative analysis. And can you explain to us a little bit more about why you believe that's a conservative analysis? And I take it you mean that the number could really be a lot higher.
Yes, we took the time that the car started, not the time the car left home, and there was a significant idle time sitting at home throughout this two-month period. Mm-hmm. We also didn't take into account the times that he was sitting idle, you know, at this 22538 Delaware 62, 2.25 hours. We don't know what that is. There's a lot of questions that we had that have been unanswered throughout this investigation.
So did he ever tell you what he was doing at that Delaware 62 address?
No.
And he didn't tell you what he was doing at the Fruitland Avenue address?
No.
And he never raised with you what he was doing at the Georgetown Middle School?
No.
All right. All right. Now, obviously, this is a very extensive analysis that you've done. Did you give Mr. Torres an opportunity to explain these discrepancies?
Yes, when we met with Deputy Torres, first of all, we met May the 3rd, when we met with his superiors, with Sheriff Christopher and Chief Deputy Lineweaver, Todd Lawson, the county administrator, myself, when we had inquired about those. And then we met again on May 7th with Deputy Torres, Chief Deputy Lineweaver, and then again at the pre-termination meeting. That was his chance to offer any explanation to the charges that were brought against him.
I'm sorry. Well, let me just back up 1 second. So May 3rd, you met with his direct supervisor, Chief Deputy Lineweaver, and with Sheriff Christopher, correct?
That's correct.
And at that time, what explanation did they give for these discrepancies between the GPS and the daily log sheets?
The GPS must be wrong. There's administrative tasks that Deputy Torres is allowed, he's afforded, since they only have one computer in their office, in the sheriff's office. They are able to work from home or in their vehicles.
Okay. Now, am I correct? There's about 40 county vehicles that have a GPS system in them?
That's correct.
Has anyone else reported that the GPS system is not accurately reporting their locations?
No.
So this is the only individual who's made that claim, and that came through his supervisors, right, not through him directly?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Now, when that claim was made, did you attempt to, I won't make the commentary, did you attempt to verify whether or not that could be true?
Yes, we did. Mr. Godwin actually met Ms. Deputy Torres at the Circle here in Georgetown and drove his vehicle, made different stops throughout his address, turned the vehicle on, turned the vehicle off, and when they returned back, Mr. Godwin, I believe, asked Mr. Torres if he would sign that, you know, those were the things, the specific dates and times and the mileage and the places, locations they were. He did state that he would not sign that. Mr. Godwin came back, and he ran the GPS, and it matched perfectly.
Okay, so the test run that Mr. Torres went on, the dates and locations and times were recorded?
Yes.
And you said that Mr. Torres says he wouldn't sign the paper showing where they had been, but do you know if Mr. Torres agreed or disagreed with what was reported as to the routes they had taken?
I can only gather that information from Mr. Godwin.
Okay, so we'll let Mr. Godwin talk about that. Now, did you yourself also do anything to test the GPS system?
Yes. A second test was done. The first test was done by Mr. Godwin on April 30th, 2012. The second test was done by myself and Mr. Godwin. Mr. Godwin drove the vehicle, and I documented the date, the time, the location, turning the vehicle on and off, idle time, that type of thing. I recorded that. We did that on another sheriff's deputy car to test the authenticity of the system itself, the GPS system.
Okay. So you followed the same procedure that Mr. Godwin had followed. You went to specific locations, wrote down the times that you were there, turned the car on and off, and then came back and compared that to the GPS system?
That's correct.
And was the GPS system accurate?
Yes, it was.
All right. Now, did the county do anything else to receive an assurance that the GPS system was, in fact, working properly?
Yes. Page 65 of your binder, we got a attestation and certification of records from Network Fleet, which basically they gave us a huge stack of paperwork that confirms that all of our times that we receive in our reports match the information that they have.
Okay, as I understand it, that that's document is SC-60, did you say?
65.
65. And that's a sworn statement from the GPS vendor, correct?
That is correct.
And that has on it the vehicles that Mr. Torres was driving for the county, correct?
That is correct.
So they were attesting to the fact that the reports for Mr. Torres' vehicle were true and correct?
Yes.
Okay. I sort of sidetracked you a little bit on this GPS testing issue, but you talked about the May 3rd meeting with the sheriff and with the chief deputy. As I understand it, you met on May 7th with Mr. Torres himself?
That's correct.
And can you describe that meeting for us?
That meeting was mainly questions that were directed towards Deputy Torres were mainly answered by Chief Deputy Lineweaver. He did state that he knows that he was working. He said that he's getting work done, but, he really stated that the GPS has to be wrong, that there's other issues. There was some confusion about an idle report that was sent to him, and we were questioning during that meeting why such long idle times on the May 3rd meeting.
Right.
During that, they took that to mean that that was the activity report, and it was actually the idle report.
Okay.
So there was some confusion.
So the idle report is the GPS report of the idle time, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So that shows, as we said, when the vehicle is stopped and running, but not going anywhere.
That's correct.
Right. So you gave them that information, and then what else happened?
After that, we concluded the meeting. Before that, I addressed some questions to Deputy Torres. I never really got straight answers other than I'm working. The GPS has to be wrong. You know, I'm doing other work. After that meeting, Dennis came back to me with all the daily log sheets, and we started cross-referencing things. I had asked Dennis to come to my office on May 9th. I sent him a meeting request. At 8:30 in the morning, Dennis came and stated that he was instructed by Sheriff Christopher not to talk to me.
Let me just get this straight. You asked for information that could be helpful to determining whether Mr. Torres is in fact falsifying time, and the sheriff told his deputy not to speak with you?
That is correct.
Okay. All right, so tell me about the rest of that meeting.
So I stated to Chief Deputy Lineweaver, you know, we just need to find out why the daily log sheets and the GPS are not matching. The information they provided to us, our GPS, nothing was matching. Needed answers on addresses, idle times, what was going on. And at that point, I really couldn't get any more information. So on May 9th, I sent an email to Sheriff Christopher requesting a meeting with him, County Administrator Todd Lawson, and myself. He called me back and stated that he was not meeting.
Okay, well, just let me break it down a little bit. So you actually sent an email directly to the sheriff?
Yes.
And you asked for a meeting with the sheriff about these issues?
Yes.
And the sheriff called you back?
Yes.
And what did he say?
He stated that he was not going to discuss this, that we were harassing them, that the meeting was not going to happen, and that he was tape recording our conversations.
Okay, and so he didn't give you any information that could possibly explain the discrepancies in Deputy Torres's logs and the GPS reports?
No.
And he said he wasn't going to do that?
No.
All right. Now, just one side issue here. There was some discussion about Deputy Torres claiming he had a battery problem in his vehicle during the course of this.
Yes.
Now, do the county maintenance records show a replacement of the battery in his vehicle?
Yes, he did receive a battery replacement, and this is on the vehicle maintenance record, which is bait stamp 52 in your binder.
Okay.
He went in for a routine on March the 6th where they replaced the air filter, the serpentine belt, and the battery. The battery, I understand, was 3 years old. And after speaking with a fleet manager, he stated that generally they are replaced every 3 to 4 years.
So this was a routine replacement?
Yes.
There's also been some discussion by the other side about an alternator problem that Mr. Torres alleged has taken place. Did you determine whether or not there were any maintenance records with the county where Mr. Torres, reported an alternator problem?
There was nothing reflected on the maintenance record. I spoke to the mechanic, the county mechanic, and he stated that he did not have any indication of an alternator problem. I spoke with the fleet manager, Mr. Hal Godwin, and he stated that he had no knowledge of any of this.
So at least as far as the county records show, Mr. Torres never reported an alternator problem to the county with his vehicle.
That's correct.
All right, let's go back now in terms of the chronology. You told us about the May 3rd and May 7th meetings. Did you reach a preliminary conclusion as to whether or not Mr. Torres's conduct warranted dismissal from his position with the county?
Yes.
And what was the conclusion you reached?
We did conclude that he was actually falsifying documentation, he was misappropriating overtime, and there seems to be an abuse of county time and his equipment, his vehicle.
And did you discuss that with the county administrator, Mr. Todd Lawson?
Yes, I did.
And was the conclusion reached as to whether or not the county should move forward with a dismissal of Mr. Torres?
Yes, we felt that it was warranted.
In the binder, there's a letter dated May 16. I believe it's SC2. Can you identify what that is?
This is the pre-termination letter to Mr. Torres from County Administrator Todd Lawson.
Okay, now, a pre-termination letter, your understanding, what's the purpose of the pre-termination letter?
That is to afford the employee the opportunity to tell us why that they should not be terminated, why These policy infractions or other infractions have are not true, not to be true.
So it's a due process mechanism. It's a chance for him to tell you, you know, any evidence he wants to submit, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And was a pre-termination hearing actually held?
Yes.
And were you present?
I was.
Can you tell us what happened?
Yes. During that meeting, Mr. Torres supplied us with a letter, and that is on page 5 and 6. And then also, he read from page 7 in the meeting. He read bullet points. And then after he concluded that, those bullet points, he stated, and that's all I have to say.
So he just read the documents that are in the binder, or the document that's in the binder, and then said he would say nothing else?
That's correct.
Okay. After that meeting, did you and Mr. Lawson discuss whether Mr. Torres had said anything or brought anything to your attention that would change your recommendation for his dismissal?
No, we felt none of our issues had been addressed.
Okay. And did after that, was Mr. Torres terminated?
Yes, he was. He was terminated on that Tuesday. The preterm hearing was on Friday, May 18th, and the termination letter was issued on Tuesday, May 22nd.
Okay. Now, did when you went to deliver the pre-termination letter to Mr. Torres, what happened with that?
With the pre-termination
letter. Was it the pre-termination or the termination letter? Was it the pre-term letter?
The pre-term letter. When it was served to Mr. Torres, a representative from the Human Resources Department went to the sheriff's office to give him some paperwork, and which was the pre-termination letter. When she arrived, Deputy Torres stated that I can't take anything, and I'm not going to take anything unless Sheriff Christopher was there.
Now, did he say if Sheriff Christopher told him to take that position?
Yes.
Okay. Did you follow up in response to that? This is one of your staff who attempted to deliver the letter on Deputy Torres?
That is correct.
And when you found out about that, what did you do?
She had called me in the office and stated that she tried to deliver the letter. He would not accept it. I drove to the West Complex at that point, told him verbally that he was being put on paid administrative leave, that an investigation was happening. I advised him that he needed to open his letter and read what his rights were in his pre-termination letter.
Okay. So in that pre-term letter, you advised him of the right to a hearing that we talked about before?
Right.
Okay. And there was, in fact, a pre-termination hearing we've already discussed?
Yes.
Okay. And then he received the termination letter, which was dated May 22nd?
That's correct.
Okay. And did that letter advise him of his right to a hearing before the personnel board?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Now, as the county director of human resources, are you confident that the decision to dismiss Mr. Torres was the correct one?
I am.
And are you confident that the county has discharged its all of its responsibilities in connection with making that decision?
Yes.
Did the county, Mr. Lawson, the administrator, consult with the sheriff during the course of this? I believe you mentioned the May 3rd hearing, among others.
Yes, these were the meetings that took place. Outside of that, there was many emails, voicemails, correspondence between County Administrator Lawson and Chief Deputy Lineweaver and Sheriff Christopher.
So, in fact, Administrator Lawson did consult with the sheriff before making a decision to dismiss Mr. Torres.
Yes.
And he received any information that the sheriff wanted to give him?
No.
Did the sheriff offer any information as to what the problems were with the discrepancies?
GPS was wrong. The computer issues that he's doing administrative tasks, that he has the ability to clean his vehicle at home, has the ability to clean his guns, and I believe they call it leather, at home.
And did they ever offer any explanation for any of these addresses, the Wilson Avenue, Fruitland Avenue, Georgetown Middle School, that Mr. Torres was going to?
No.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have.
This may be an appropriate time to take a 5-minute recess. If Ms. Murray, if you have no objection. This is obviously going to take some time. If we come back in 5 minutes, I ask the two counsel, what time do you think would be an appropriate time to break for lunch? You know, after, Ms. Murray, how long do you anticipate taking with your cross?
Probably 30 minutes.
Okay.
I said probably 30 minutes.
Okay, why don't we take a 5-minute recess? It would take a motion from this board to go in recess for 5 minutes, then return here. We'll come back in session. And then after Ms. Murray is complete with her cross-examination, then we will break for lunch at that time. Okay, can we have a motion?
We'd like a motion from the floor to recess for 5 minutes.
Second.
So moved.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion passed.
Okay, we'll take 5-minute recess.